Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezevic, the reporter Nick Keyser with you on this Tuesday. Hope you had a happy and safe Memorial Day weekend. Good to be back in the saddle with the whole crew here. Lots to get into with D-Hop. He's on the move, released by Arizona. Could the Titans be in play? Probably not, but it's worth talking about. That is for sure. And how about Nashville zone, specifically Hendersonville zone, Joseph Newgarden winning the Indianapolis 500, which was such a cool thing to see. Have known Joseph for quite a while. He's been in these very studios, so to see him cross the bricks and take the win in one of the biggest races, maybe the biggest race in motorsports, was pretty cool. Michelle, what's up?
Nothing. Short week this week. So
Yeah, I know.
Doing well this morning.
Yeah, no, feeling good and ready to get into things. Let's start with the Titans. And one piece of NHL news, I will pass this along. Nick, I don't know if you've seen this yet, but Elliot Friedman putting it out there. This is a name that people have been paying attention to. This will not come as a huge surprise to many, but hearing Washington is closing in on Spencer Carberry as their next head coach. So Spencer Carberry, who was in the organization when Barry Trotz was there. There's been some dots connected. Looks like he's going to be the Capitals' next head coach. So
that's interesting. Peter Laviolette might be heading to New York with the Rangers.
That surprises me a little bit. You go on, you move on from Gerard Gallant, who expects a lot of his players, can be tough to play for, and then you go and you get kind of a similar guy. So that's interesting. Not done yet, but interesting that could be the move. But with the Titans, we got the news right after our show, and I walked in here with Willie and Derek, and I said two things. I said, one, Caroline has to hate that she's off today with this coming out, and two, could this not have broken at like 10:05?
Yeah, I know, right? Our entire show would have looked completely different. I was actually getting my nails done, and all of a sudden you texted me, and I got a bunch of other texts, and all they said was D-Hop, and I got very excited that, oh my goodness, did something happen here? Like, well, what's happening? And then I just saw that he was released, which is also exciting, but I kind of got ahead of myself when you get that text from a friend, and you're like, oh goodness, something is happening. Something has happened in the NFL. But yeah, he gets released, what, not even an hour after our show?
Oh yeah, it was like 30 minutes. Something like that. But, you know, and I will say this. We're going to talk about it. You want to talk about it. It's fun to dream. There are some dots you can connect, obviously, that, you know, Tim Kelly was his offensive coordinator in Houston. He's the offensive coordinator here. But in the grand scheme of things, I would say it's unlikely that he comes to the Titans.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard and we've seen some of the reports that even when – Arizona, like prior to them releasing him, that it was really the Bills and the Chiefs trying to go and get him. And you know it'll somehow end up being the Chiefs.
The Chiefs do make the most sense.
They do.
They need receiver help, believe it or not.
Yeah, and who wouldn't want to go play with Patrick Mahomes? If you look at what kind of cap space they have, and I know you can manipulate some things, but a lot of it will depend on, Arizona's paying that dead cap hit, but how much does DeAndre Hopkins want? And I think us seeing what OBJ got from the Ravens just a couple months ago, I think he's going to want more than that because he's not coming off, you know, two torn ACLs, but he did have the PED issue and some issues just last year. And Arizona was just, I mean, that was just a mess over there with Kyler Murray and Kingsbury and DeAndre Hopkins. Like, all of that was just a mess. But, I mean, I think he's going to be wanting something in the – in the 18s, 19s, 20 million range.
Yeah.
And that's for a 1 year. I mean, OBJ got 1 year and he can make up to 18 million.
Yeah. And look, I don't know if DeAndre's going to get that. Because the fact of the matter is, and all the teams, even the teams that want him are going to know this, and Albert Breer put this out there, the Chiefs and the Bills were the only teams to have substantive trade talks with Arizona. And I feel like because teams weren't going to give up what Arizona probably would want to pull off a trade and then turn around and have to pay him.
Exactly.
And so the question is going to be then, will DeAndre Hopkins outprice himself? I mean, we see that all the time. I mean, OBJ had to wait. He had to miss a year. Now, granted, he was coming off an injury. But I think some believed he outpriced himself, and teams were like, man, you're great. We'd love to have you. We're not going to pay that much. And so that could be the case with Hopkins.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you mentioned not as many teams being willing to go and get him when you had to give up draft capital. I think things are probably a little bit more open now as to what teams are maybe contacting DeAndre Hopkins people. How much does he want? That is the big question, and that's what it comes down to. I mean, Buffalo and Kansas City, if you go on SpotTrack, they're at the bottom. I mean, they have pretty much utilized almost all of their cap space. It also depends on what does DeAndre Hopkins want. I look at Buffalo, and he's not going to be the number one wide receiver in Buffalo. In Kansas City, yeah, I think Travis Kelce will be the number one target, but he'll be the number one wide receiver there. And you're going to a team that just won another Super Bowl, and Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback in the league. But does he want to go somewhere? I don't know. I know we're going to bring it to the Tennessee Titans here. What makes it attractive to him? I mean, of course, you can pull the dots between Tim Kelly was his offensive coordinator when Deshaun Watson was there and DeAndre Hopkins was in Houston. Mike Vrabel was there. Actually, there was a good article on A to Z Sports. Sam Phelan wrote it that, you know, DeAndre Hopkins has had some really great comments regarding Mike Vrabel. They obviously had a really good relationship while he was in Houston, and he went on to say how, you know, him and Vrabel had a really strong connection, not only on the field but off the field. There's obviously a tie there. He clearly would be the number one wide receiver here. I would view this offense a lot differently if he was in this offense, but when you look at this team, you look at the question marks, you look at Derrick Henry is your number one guy. They're a run first team. And he's also in his 30s. I mean, does he want to be a blocking wide receiver, right? Is he at that point in his career?
I don't think he cares what he has to do. I think he just wants to win. And that's the bottom line. I think if he knows he's going to go play for Andy Reid and a team that just won the Super Bowl and is the favorites to win the Super Bowl again, I think whatever Andy Reid asks him to do, he'll do. I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it. Now,
no, I was talking about coming
no,
here.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And I'm connecting the dot, connecting it together, because you come here, he's going to be asked to do all that stuff, and he's probably not going to win a Super Bowl. That's what I'm saying. Like, this team is not there yet. Now, D-Mace, talking about D-Hop, made an interesting point on Friday when this news came out, and that was if the Titans were to turn the keys to Will Levis, should they make more of a pursuit for a receiver like DeAndre Hopkins? Here was Derek Mason.
You look at the numbers, you watch the film, and you say, is he a guy that can help your team immediately? Well, I think if you're the Titans, yes, he could, but what would it cost? What would we have to do? What pieces do we have to move around in order to bring a guy like that to our receiver room? Now, listen, if this is Will Levis and he was your starter, first-year starter, he's your starter, I'm saying do whatever you need to do to get D-Hop. Why? Because he's a rookie quarterback's dream. He's a guy that's always going to be where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there. He's a veteran. He understands how to play this game. And most of all, he's going to catch the football when you throw it to him. He's one of those guys like Tannehill treated A.J. Brown. It's like, listen, A.J.'s out there, I'm just throwing it because I believe he will get the ball. That's D-Hop.
That was D-Mace on Friday. I think he makes a good point. I mean, now, could Ryan Tannehill benefit from him too? Absolutely. But, you know, you still have question marks on Treylon Burks and whether Treylon is going to be able to be that number one wide receiver for this team. And so, you know, if you are going to turn the keys over to a rookie, getting that veteran guy that's going to make him feel better and make him feel more comfortable would certainly help him. But
I completely disagree.
Okay, you say no.
Yeah, I say no. I mean, if you're going to hand the keys over to Will Levis, I mean, why are you going to go out and get a $20 million a year wide receiver who's already in his 30s? And when Will Levis is actually in his prime, you're probably going to be off of him. And I also don't see any team giving DeAndre Hopkins more than a year contract. I mean, the way I look at it is if you are going to hand the keys over, then let him gain the chemistry with Treylon Burks, Chig Okonkwo, and the guys who are – Kyle Phillips, the guys who are going to be a part of this roster. I just don't know. And I understand I understand Derek's point there. Like, that would be a rookie – that would be a rookie quarterback's best friend, a wide receiver like that. But, you know, I look at just let Treylon Burks get all the targets then. If you're going to hand the keys over to him, you're not worried about winning. And I also don't know if, like, would DeAndre Hopkins even want to come here if they're handing the keys over to Will Levis? Because that automatically means, okay, you have a rookie quarterback. The likelihood of winning your division is very, very small, and the likelihood of being successful in the AFC is very, very slim. I if you're keeping Ryan Tannehill and you decide to go get D-Hop, okay, great. I look at this team completely different, and I think that, you know, you have a very solid shot at winning this division and, you know, making a playoff run. But I just don't know if the $20 million a year, the 1-2 year contract, maybe, I just don't know if it would be worth it if you're putting Will Levis out there.
Well, sometimes when you do live radio, you have to shift because they do that in racing. Indy 500 champion Joseph Newgarden going to join us in about 5 minutes. Looking forward to that. Been working to get him on after he won the Indianapolis 500 on Sunday, Hendersonville zone, so really excited about that. So we will continue the Titans talk. Jonathan Hutton, who usually joins us on Monday, is going to join us at 10:30 today. So we'll get into all that, plus the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals are all set. But Joseph Newgarden, Indy 500 champ, next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Ferrucci trying to get a draft off Newgarden and Erickson, but Newgarden with a monster run off turn two.
Joseph Newgarden has never won the Indianapolis 500, and he's ahead on this last lap. Joseph Newgarden, is this the moment when the pain ends?
By one.
The drought, is it over for Joseph Newgarden, or does Marcus Erickson have something?
By two.
Team Penske at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and Joseph Newgarden finally wins the Indianapolis 500. It's the captain's 19th win, Newgarden's first.
There you go. That is how it sounded on NBC Hendersonville Zone. Joseph Newgarden wins the Indianapolis 500. Back here, Chase and Michelle. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, 102.5, 106.3, the game. And we say hello now to our good friend, the champ, Joseph Newgarden. Hey, buddy, congrats.
Welcome in. Congrats.
Unbelievable. So great to chat with you guys. Just can't believe it. It gets me emotional every time I hear it back now.
Yeah, how many times have you listened to that over the last few days?
Well, maybe that's the problem. I've only actually heard it back a couple times, or I'll see a video clip, but I haven't seen it super often. So every time it comes up, it just, you know, it hits differently than any other race that I've been in. It's the Indy 500. You know, we run a lot of races throughout the year, and it's the most difficult one to get right and for everybody to, you know, execute on and make sure we secure.
Yeah.
Realize it was just amazing.
100%. And it was so much fun to watch. I was sitting with some friends watching and about to head to a Sounds game, and I'm like, I got to watch the end of this race. Joseph's had a heck of a car. All the cautions kept coming out, which I know has to be frustrating for a driver. But on that last restart where you were lining up, what was going through your head of what you needed to do to win this thing?
Well, it was a unique shootout. You know, we had one lap to go coming out of the pits, and we knew everything was going to have to be, you know, basically put on the line right there and then. That was going to decide the race. And so for me, it was just a matter of, you know, simply getting in front of Erickson as soon as possible. And, you know, I left a little bit of a gap to him on the restart, probably too big, actually, and then just set myself up, you know, coming off turn two and making the move on the back straight. And I thought at that point it was probably, you know, easily over, but he had a huge run coming back to the front straight through three and four, and I did everything I could to protect. I was just as aggressive as possible coming to the line, you know, as we were in position, and the last thing I wanted to do was give it up at that point.
Joseph Newgarden is with us, Indianapolis 500 champion. And Joseph, you and I have done quite a bit together over the years, and we always come back to what's left to do. You've won championships, and You always quickly remind me, hey, Indy, I got to win the Indy 500. Now, can we say the Grand Prix next? Is that next on the list?
I hope so. You know, we're young, right? We're young with this event. It's going to be its third year, which is fantastic. You know, I think Nashville has been a tremendous race for us to add to the calendar, and I hope it doesn't go anywhere for a long time. But yeah, I would love to win the race, as you can imagine, just being from Nashville and having that as, you know, the hometown event. It'd be very, very special. So I can't wait to get back there in August and, you know, see everybody and hopefully have a great day.
Do you feel like that there is a weight that's been lifted off your shoulders now that you've kissed the bricks?
Yeah, no doubt there's a change if you're able to win the race. You know, I don't subscribe to the logic or the thesis that you have to win the Indianapolis 500 to have a successful career in IndyCar, but most people do, and there's a pressure that comes with that. And so I think when you're able to realize it finally and win the race, it definitely relieves a lot of the stress and, you know, the questions that you have to constantly field every month of May leading up to the race. So I'm most looking forward to coming back next year and, you know, possibly just having a more relaxed, you know, program and relaxed outlook.
Joseph Newgarden, Indianapolis 500 winner, joins us right now. Joseph, I think you might have had probably one of the best celebrations after you won the race. You hop out of the car and the videos are surfacing. I'm sure you've seen them on social media, and you're running out of your car and you just jump and you just go in the mosh pit of fans. What was going through your head when you got out of the car and you jumped the fence and you just go celebrate with all of those fans right there?
Well, I've always wanted to do that. You know, Indianapolis and that the 500 race is unique to anywhere else in the world. There's an energy level there from that crowd that you won't see at any other sporting event. And I always wanted to be a part of that if we were able to win the race. So I knew exactly where I was going to park the car, you know, where I was going to try and go through the fence. And it got a little bit crazier than I maybe envisioned in my mind. I quickly realized I wasn't going to go as far into the crowd as I thought I could, but it was incredible. You know, as you can imagine, pretty much exactly as you could imagine how crazy it would be is what it was. And it was, you know, just a memory that I'm going to, you know, certainly cherish forever.
So is that something that so you said you have that plan, like if I win the Indy 500, I know what I want my celebration to be. So then what was going through your head when you're about to cross the finish line? You're like, I know my plan. I know what I'm about to do.
I mean, basically right afterwards, you know, it was pretty surreal coming to the line, knowing that it was going to work out. I mean, I could tell we were in the right spot, and, you know, then you just go through the relief and you know, the crazy emotion pretty quickly after that. But then as I was running back around, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And yeah, it was so cool. I couldn't get out of the car quick enough.
So talking to Joseph Newgarden, Indy 500 champion, how cool was it to, you heard that clip of the 19th win for the captain, for Roger Penske, what he's meant to you. We've talked about it so many times in running for that team. What was that conversation like with Roger when you got out as an Indy 500 champion?
Well, it was just special to, you know, see him there in that position. This is the first 500 that he's won as also the team owner of the track, or I should say, not say team owner, but the custodian, the owner of the actual facility. You know, it's really Roger's house these days, and it's never looked more beautiful. It's never felt better to be there. And so to give him a win, you know, after taking over the ownership side of the track was really, I think, unique and special for him. And, you know, he's all business. He's already moving on. He's looking for number 20. We're trying to celebrate number 19, and he's already thinking about how we're going to win number 20, which I admire, because that's exactly how I am.
Well, Ryan Blaney helped him out last night by winning the Coke 600 on the NASCAR side. So it's been a good weekend for Team Penske.
Yeah, it was super cool. I've been pretty heartbroken for Ryan over the last year and a half, almost 2 years. He's been really close to winning a race again. And, you know, everyone's been giving him a hard time and trying to, you know, question, you know, hey, it's been this many races since you won, you know, what's the problem, et cetera. But he's been solid. You know, he's a great racer. And to be able to share that with him, it's never happened in our team's history. You know, I was surprised to learn that. I would have assumed at some point over this team's time that they've won the double, you know, where they win the 500 and the Coke 600 on the same day, but it's never happened. So to be able to be the first to do that with Ryan was very, very special.
Joseph Newgarden is with us. Okay, well, you know I have to ask this now. You told me one time when you won the Indy 500 that maybe you and Roger would talk about trying the double. You've never done NASCAR before. Have you thought about that, or is that something that you might think about in the future?
Oh, definitely. You know, I would love to be a part of that effort. You know, there's just a lot of crossover interest. I mean, I think in motorsports right now, specifically IndyCar and NASCAR, you see tremendous interest from both sides and what, you know, everybody is doing. We're all motorsports fans. You know, like I mentioned, I follow Ryan a lot. I follow our team quite a bit and vice versa. You know, they're always watching our stuff and excited about our races. And, you know, Kyle Larson's coming over to run the Indianapolis 500 next year, which is going to be great. He's going to be a huge addition, and that's something that's been on his bucket list. But, yeah, I don't know if I'll be able to conjure up an opportunity for the double at any point soon. But if it's possible, believe me, I would want to do it. It's something I'd sign up for happily.
I feel like there is more of an interest in the crossover with all forms of racing. It's not just IndyCar and NASCAR, but you're seeing some F1 guys that are jumping over, and it just feels like more so than ever there's that thirst to combine fan bases and the drivers to jump around. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. You know, I just think there's more crossover these days, and you know, to have the interest in this, you know, the support across motorsports as a whole is great. It's good for everybody, you know, and there's great forms of it. I always was just a motorsports fan growing up. I didn't care what it was I was watching, whether it was IndyCar, NASCAR, Formula One, it didn't really matter. I liked all of it. But I think you're seeing that attitude come back into the sport a lot more these days because, you know, we're all high level motorsports drivers, you know, and, you know, IndyCar guys are interested in the NASCAR stuff. NASCAR guys are interested in IndyCar stuff. It's fun for everybody to see that mix up and an opportunity. And so Kyle will be a really cool addition. And, you know, there's more that want to do it. I know Kyle Busch is pretty adamant that he's going to do it at some point, and I'm sure we'll see more than just him.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Joseph, I'm so proud of you. I'm happy for you. It was such an awesome scene to see on Sunday with you getting that win, but congratulations, and we'll talk to you here soon as we get ready for August and the Music City Grand Prix.
Congrats.
Amazing. Thank you. See ya.
See ya. Joseph Newgarden, Indy 500 champion, and I'm sure he's done probably 100 interviews since winning the Indy 500, but always a pleasure. I mean, I remember he can't, you know, he's come up here several times over the years, and you know, Darren introduced us, and Darren was talking to him before anybody knew who he was at all. He was running Indy Lights out at the Super Speedway and didn't have big sponsorship. He came into the IndyCar series on a small team, finally gets that chance with Penske, and now he's won, I think, 20 races, 2 championships, and now Indy 500. You know, that's a Hall of Fame career
there.
So
Big check mark off his list.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is he's 32. Like, he's still very young for a race car driver, and so sky is the limit for him. But it was one of those, when he won, I literally yelled out, "He did it," and the whole bar was looking at me like, "What? Who did what?" But it was
also
so cool.
A great person. 2 years ago, I was telling you, Chase, when I was living in Indianapolis, it was the COVID year, so it was when the Indy 500, it wasn't in May, I think it was in August or something, got to interview him, and just a good person and really exciting. All the celebration videos, the milk, it just looks incredible, and happy he was able to join us right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So Joseph Newgarden, Indy 500 champion, joining us here on Chase and Michelle. Coming up next, we will get into the Predators a little bit, because I heard this discussion on Robbie and Rex Road. I even heard a little bit of it yesterday. And just what's going to happen with the Predators and them moving forward, because I'm still confused on why we're evaluating. We'll discuss that next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
In Nashville, we still don't have clarity on John Hines' situation there, but I do believe the Predators have talked to some other potential coaches. I think some people would like to see just Hines get some clarity here on what his future is, but I think the Predators have looked elsewhere.
Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet over the weekend. He said some similar things on Caroline Willie and D-Mace, which you can hear every Thursday at 1. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Appreciate Joseph Newgarden for joining us in the last segment. He's done a lot, so I'm thankful that he was able to make that work, and thanks to IndyCar as well. But now shifting gears, pun intended, to the Predators and what's next for them. It looks like Spencer Carberry is going to be the head coach of the Washington Capitals. It looks like Peter LaViolette is going to be the head coach of the New York Rangers. So on my count, that leaves Columbus. This is still open. Is that right, Nick? Columbus is open. Nashville not open, but you know the evaluation is still ongoing. What else would be open after that?
The Ducks is still open. Calgary's still open. Those are the ones I can think of.
So Columbus, Anaheim, and Calgary.
I believe that's it right now.
I think you're right. So you know what exactly does that mean to me now that Carberry's potentially off the table, and while though it's not official, I do wonder if the weight is has something to do with Carl Taylor, whether that is the head coach or announcing him as a part of the staff.
I just don't know why you would wait. I mean, you are a part of the same organization. I don't know what the benefit of that would be, because right now I kind of look at this situation, and I think John Glennon did a really good job of explaining it earlier on Robbie and Rex Road, that, you know, you're kind of just holding on to John Hines, and it's like, okay, I have my Jell-O cup here, but if I can't get the pudding, I'm going to keep the Jell-O. But I'm keeping the Jell-O on my plate, but I'm really trying to go get the pudding.
That's an interesting analogy.
But if I can't get the pudding, then I'm going to keep the Jell-O. Like, I just don't understand, like, why that would be the motive right now. Because then you put John Hines and his whole coaching staff, if you're going to completely change the staff, then you put them in a situation where, you know, it's already May 30th. We have our final two teams in the NHL playoffs right now. Then it doesn't give them much time to go look for another job or figure out what they're doing. And, you know, the draft and free agency are around the corner too. So, I mean, we must be finding out something this week.
Yeah. And, right? Oh, we have to. And because here's the other part of this, and Robbie mentioned it, and, you know, I've thought about it too.
Thank you for liking my analogy of the pudding in the
Yeah,
jello.
That was good. That was very good. And you go through this whole thing, and then what do you do if you're John Hines and they go to him and they go, hey, yeah, no, we're good. Yeah, you're going to stay. We're going to keep you as a head coach. And then you got to walk into the locker room, and they're all thinking, like, well, did they try to fire him? And then they couldn't get who they wanted. And, like, it just creates some awkwardness. Now, again, there's probably been some conversations behind the scenes that we don't know about.
Of course.
And the other part of this is, and I know several people have brought up, well, you know, Poile is still the GM. Okay, yes, but he's letting Barry Trotz go ahead and make moves. You can't wait till July 1st to make a coaching move. You just can't. I mean, that's post-draft. Free agency opens then. Players need to know who they're playing for. David Poile would be doing Barry Trotz a massive disservice if he made him wait until he was officially the guy. So I don't think that's it at all. And the other part is we don't know Barry Trotz as the GM. We know him as a coach. We don't know him as a GM. He's playing things close to the vest. That's his prerogative. He has every right to do that. And like I said, there's probably been some discussion behind the scenes on, you know, what is going to happen. I mean, I can't think of, if Carberry's off the table, I don't see a situation where Daryl Sutter, you know, somebody like that would be in play. I don't think he'd be a fit here.
Yeah.
I feel like Barry would find a younger, you know, up-and-coming coach similar to what he was when David Poile hired him, as opposed to an established guy. Now, I mean, there's some people out there that he, you know, he's friends with, he knows. You know, people are going to bring up Joel Quenneville. I think it's going to be very hard for Joel Quenneville to get back in. I mean, he's going to have to go through a whole process and be reinstated by the NHL, and there's a lot of – I mean, look, he's a hell of a coach, but there's some stuff. There's a lot of baggage there.
Yeah,
I mean, that I think they want to stay away from.
And, you know, back to your point too quick, Chase, about, you know, Barry Trotz and what he may be looking for. Well, Elliot Friedman doesn't go on Sportsnet and just say anything. If no. he specifically says in the clip we just heard that the Predators are, you know, having conversations, I mean, that is happening. Like, there is movement going on. Elliot is such a, you know, veteran, respected reporter in the NHL, and he's not going to go on and say something like that if there's really nothing to it.
100%.
So the fact that, you know, he's saying that, but also saying, you know, similar things about teams who have already let go of their coach, I guess my question is, why are you still, you know, kind of hanging on to John Hines and the coaching staff if you very much are fielding your other options? And then in the back of your mind, you're thinking, oh, I guess we'll just let him coach the last year under contract. Like, I just don't know who – that doesn't do a service to anybody.
No, I think – and that's the thing with Elliot said this a few weeks ago. I think that's the thing that coaches or GMs don't like when a coach gets to the last year of the contract, because it's just kind of that if you don't extend him, it's a lame duck here. Because everybody kind of feels like, okay, well, you're going to let him get to the end, and then you obviously don't feel confident in him enough to give him an extension.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where they're at with John Hines. John Hines will be on the last year of his contract. You know, Barry Trotz could make the argument that he's going to let it play out because he's just coming in as GM.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of feel, I've said I think John deserves another opportunity. I would retool the staff. And
sure.
look at it that way, but make some tweaks there. But, you know, if I'm Barry, you could start making your tweaks to the roster and building the roster the way that you want the roster to be built and then see what happens. And if you get to December and it's like things aren't going all that well and you put all this work into the roster, then make your move. I mean, you see that quite a bit, but I don't know. I mean, the longer this goes, the more I think – that there's somebody else out there. But with Carberry potentially coming off the table, I wonder who that is.
Yeah, now the question is, who is it? I really don't buy into the Carl Taylor head coach because...
Why?
Well, because why wouldn't you just do it now? Why wouldn't... If you knew Carl Taylor was going to be your head coach, he's going to take that job because he's going to take a head coaching job in the NHL. Why would you still be holding on to John Hines?
Because while it's unfair to John Hines, you don't want to create... an unnecessary distraction for Milwaukee that's fighting for a championship. That I kind of feel the same way you do, but that's what they're going to say.
I understand that from a PR perspective of that's what you want to say, but I don't know who that does. I mean, okay, don't announce Carl Taylor then, but why are you still holding on to John Hines?
You got to make sure I's are dotted and T's are crossed.
Yeah, no, but my point is like, okay, allow Milwaukee to keep playing. If you know Carl Taylor is going to be your head coach, there's no sense in holding on to this staff then if you've already made up your mind.
Sure.
Whereas they could be kind of looking and fielding jobs and figuring out what they're going to do.
Right.
If you already know what you're doing.
Well,
that's why I scratch my head.
I agree. I understand. But for whatever reason, they're still in evaluation mode, and hopefully – you know, there will be some resolution to this at some point this week where it's hey, John Hines is staying or he's going and here's who's replacing him.
I honestly have no idea.
Oh, I have no idea.
Like, I thought I knew and then I thought I didn't know and now I'm...
I have no idea. I have no idea. So we will continue to monitor that. That is for sure. Coming up next, we will get back into the Titans, what we started out with. You know, the pursuit of DeAndre Hopkins. What do you think? Should the Titans pursue D-Hop? 615-737-1025. That is our phone line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll do that all next. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Join 1025, The Game for June 6th, on June 6th, for the night before Charity's Writers Round featuring Saving Abel. Benefiting Souls for Souls. General admission is $20, with every ticket going to purchase a new pair of shoes for a child experiencing homelessness in Middle Tennessee. It's all happening at the brand new venue, The Ballad East, next to the Gallatin Hotel in East Nashville. Doors will open at 6 o'clock, and you can get your tickets now at thegamenashville.com/golf. This is part of our golf tournament that's coming up next week. Hard to believe it's almost here. with everything benefiting Souls for Souls. So excited to be a part of that with them again. Broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Kieser hanging out with you. Should the Titans pursue DeAndre Hopkins? 615-737-1025. And I ask that, Michelle, because if I look at a Titans fan and I say, okay, right now, the way things are set up, with the division the way it is, the schedule the way it is, you're probably looking at maybe an 8 or a 9-win team, even with this setup. Now, that is with Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry at the helm and then this defense. If, you know, they can stay healthy, which has been a big if the last couple of years, I think there's a chance of it. 8, 9, you know, Jared even said 11 wins, which Vingan said 10. I mean, you know, those two I feel like are never that feeling that way, but they did. So I think if I look at a Titans fan and I say, now that you kind of know what this plan is, at least for this year, would you be fine not really doing anything else unless you can get a decent receiver on the cheap, which would not be DeAndre Hopkins, and you just kind of stand pat? Would you take it knowing that the moves that have been made will set you up better for the future?
It's a tough question because it's one of the reasons why the Tennessee Titans were ranked 32nd in offseason moves. It's because they kind of have one foot in a go-for-it mode when you still have Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, and the list goes on. But then on the flip side, you drafted a rookie quarterback and you have, you know, a young wide receiver core. You have young tight ends. You have a couple of young running backs, a young offensive line. So you're kind of straddling that line of, are you rebuilding or are you going for it? Because when you have a quarterback like Ryan Tannehill and you have Derrick Henry on the team, you're going to win games, especially when you're in a division like the AFC South where, yeah, the Jags have gotten better, but you're going to be the second best team. And I think it depends on, you know, what does this team want to do? I mean, do you want to win this year? Really? Because you go and get DeAndre Hopkins, you have a very good shot at winning the division, I believe.
But I think you could win it, you know, now.
I think Jacksonville, talent-wise, top to bottom, is significantly better than last year with some of the additions they've made. You know, not only Calvin Ridley, they have a very, very efficient kicker that they just got from Denver. You know, their defense was young.
Your friend Mia literally just posted a video of Brandon McManus
speaking today. But, like, you know, their defense has taken another step up. I mean, Trevor Lawrence just in a second full season with Doug Peterson. I mean, I think we look at the Jags and we think, oh, well, you know, Tennessee almost beat them last year with a depleted core and Josh Dobbs at quarterback. Well, we're also not – they got better. And I know they're still the Jags, whatever. But I don't know how much winning the division it really is so hard because – you know, I think if you go out and get DeAndre Hopkins, I view this offense completely different. I think that, you know, you genuinely have a good shot at going to the playoffs. So do you want to do that this year? Do you want to hand the reins over to Will Levis halfway through the year? If you are 2-4 at the bye week?
If you're 2-4 at the bye week, then yeah, that conversation is going to be there. I mean, I think...
But what if you already had got DeAndre Hopkins? I mean, you right? Like, yeah. It's...
Yeah, but I mean, and that's the other thing. Like, DeAndre Hopkins is probably not going to want to come here because he's going to look at it as, I don't have much of a chance to win a championship this year, at least on paper. Now, could he add to, you know, could he add to that? Of course he could. But I also don't think this team is a DeAndre Hopkins away from winning a Super Bowl. I think there's still questions with the offensive line. You're going to have a rookie and a second-year player in there, and you're hoping that you're going to get the most out of them. Obviously, the you know, they did just make a signing for you know, depth on the D line. I lost who that was, but Jaleel.
Yeah, he was out of Iowa, drafted in the fourth round in 2017 by the Vikings. Jaleel Johnson.
Yeah.
Drafted in 2017, 14th round, totaled in 6.5 sacks, 125 tackles, and 21 starts throughout his career. So yeah, he's been in the league about 5 years.
Right. Depth, and I mean, that's not a huge signing. That's depth. But, you know, they're still pretty they're not as deep at some positions as they want to be. I mean, you know, a couple Texers have brought up kicker. Okay, yeah, that is a concern. They have mm-hmm. two young guys with hardly any experience fighting it out for the kicker spot right now. So if I'm Hopkins, even though I have familiarity with Tim Kelly as the offensive coordinator, you know, I think he wants to play with an elite quarterback, and right now the Titans don't have an elite quarterback. So that's why Kansas City or Buffalo, Baltimore, that all makes sense.
Well, can they make the money work? Because that was what was coming out of the NFL, or, well, you know, like the Tom Pelisseros of the world, when it was released that the Arizona Cardinals released DeAndre Hopkins, is that, you know, the Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs were trying to get something done. They were trying to get the trade done, but they couldn't figure out the money aspect of things. Okay, well, now he's a free agent. And how much does money mean to him? Is he willing to, you know, play for a lesser amount if that means he can play with an Andy Reid and a Patrick Mahomes and play with the Chiefs and have a really good shot at, you know, winning an AFC championship and going to the Super Bowl? What does he want? Or is he at this point in his career where he's like, yeah, win some games, go to the playoffs, but I want money.
What's more important? Yeah. If I'm advising him, I take a 1 year prove it deal, you know, because here's the thing. I think he's still a very good receiver in this league, but he's coming off a suspension for PEDs. It wasn't a good situation in Arizona. Teams are going to look at that.
Of course.
So I believe if a team comes to him and says, hey, we're gonna offer you a 1 year heavy incentive laden deal with a fair base salary, but you need to kind of come prove yourself. If I'm him and I'm advising him, I tell him to take it, especially if you get a chance to play with somebody like Patrick Mahomes.
So a similar deal to an OBJ deal where they gave him a $15 million signing bonus. It's about $1.2 million a year, so that's what affects the cap, and then incentive base that he can make up to about $18
million. Yeah, I would say something like that.
I think he's going to want more than OBJ.
Probably, but I'm just saying that if...
Because OBJ set the market, right?
Sure.
Sort of. For the older, I'm just talking this offseason, for the older receiver who, yes, is out of his prime, but we've still seen perform at a high level within the last 2 years. OBJ's a little different because he's coming off both ACL injuries. But, you know, I think if you're DeAndre Hopkins, you're probably looking at the situation of, well, OBJ got that and he just tore his second ACL. Like, I want more.
Yeah, well, and let me say this too, because Ricky just called me crazy for saying, you know, he needs a prove it deal. I know, I understand what he can do. I'm talking like a GM, because GMs are going to find any way possible to get something on the cheap, because that's what they are tasked to do. They have to play within the confines of a salary cap and all of that stuff. And so if they can negotiate a deal that's going to be good for them, then they're going to do it. And that, I believe, is going to be the narrative. If there was such a high demand for him, then they would have traded him a long time ago. But, I mean, I think everybody looks at he's an elite receiver. He has been an elite receiver, but
people don't want to give up future assets for a guy who's already in his 30s,
right?
Had the PED, had the injuries. It's a couple different knocks where it's like, I'm not going to move, you know, earth, wind, and fire to go and get him, but I'm like, maybe I'd give him a 1 year, you know, big signing bonus, 1 year, heavy incentive, if I'm in a go for it mode.
Yeah, and the difference in D-Hop and OBJ is D-Hop's not coming off a significant injury, so
and is also
that does help him.
OBJ didn't even play for a whole year. I mean, we have no idea what he's going to look
like. Yeah, no, I mean, I think $18 million is pretty risky for him. So
I agree.
So we'll see. 615-737-1025 is the number if you want to weigh in on that. But the question is, with this and with the plan that the Titans currently have laid out, let's say they don't get DeAndre Hopkins, are you okay with just staying the course on this maybe with the caveat being you find a decent receiver cheap via a trade or somebody getting cut as camp goes on. We'll discuss that coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.